Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Senator Dianne Feinstein on gun control.
The American people are very much for it. There's a new poll out, 50,000 people in the field, 68% supportive of a ban on assault weapons.
So why do they cling to their assault weapons and 30-round magazines? Senator Dianne Feinstein wanted to know there as she introduced a bill last week to outlaw many kinds of assault weapons and gun magazines that hold more than 10 bullets. But President Obama told the New Republic that gun control advocates need to listen better to gun owners if the nation is to make any progress on this issue. Did you happen to see that in the New Republic, which came out this weekend? So let's talk about that and more with Matthew Dowd, columnist for National Journal, former chief strategist for the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign, and a frequent contributor to ABC This Week with George Stephanopoulos. Hi, Matthew. Thank you very much for coming on WNYC again.
Good morning. Glad to be here. Thank you.
And it caught my ear on ABC last weekend when you mentioned that you live in Texas and have owned 5 guns. And I thought you'd be a good guest to help people on either side of this listen to each other. So can you start by telling us what kinds of guns you own and why you own them?
Sure. I mean, I grew up in Michigan, but I settled in Texas about 20-something years ago. I own 2 shotguns, which is, a 20-gauge and a 12-gauge, and I own a 22 rifle and a 2 other rifles. You know, all of them were for either hunting quail or dove or some other animal or something in the brush. And then it's also for just target shooting or plink shooting. I actually don't keep them in my home. I keep them in a safe in another location because I'm obviously worried about gun safety and all of that happens. So, and I haven't actually shot them in probably a couple of years, but I have them and they're a good sporting thing in my view.
So President Obama had that famous caught on tape moment telling donors in the 2008 campaign why he thought some conservatives, quote, cling to their guns and religion. Why do you think people cling to assault weapons and 30-round capacity magazines, which are the focal point of the Feinstein bill? Maybe you can be a cultural translator for some of our New York area listeners who don't get it at all and just think people who feel strongly about those items are gun nuts.
Sure. I think there's two explanations. One, the president, I think, is actually right. And this happens a lot, as you know, Brian, with a lot of issues and a lot of things in Washington, where people say they represent a group and they announce positions or announce ways that they say they're going to represent them, and they don't often represent them. And I think the NRA is a bit out of step with its own membership and with a lot of other people that aren't members. I mean, let's keep in mind that the NRA, I think, represents about 4 million people, and I think the number of gun owners in the United States is something about 50 million people. So they don't necessarily represent either their members or the country as a whole that sort of has guns to use for sport or hunting or whatever. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is it's just a tradition. I think if you go out there and the people that I've hunted with and been with, and there's a lot of people obviously in Texas that own rifles and shotguns, no one thinks there's a need for, 50 caliber clips, and no one thinks there's a need for almost nearly automatic assault rifles. No one thinks there's a need for it. But there's also a sense, there is an anti sort of Washington sense of like we can manage this, stay out of our business. But most people and most gun owners and most people that have this conversation, even in Texas, think something needs to be done. And there's no reason that some reasonable measures can't be done. But the base of it, though, there is a fear that once Washington, from a sort of independent sort of private property standpoint, once Washington tries to get their hands on something, they're not going to stop it being reasonable. And I think that's part of it.
So listeners, if you own guns categorized as assault weapons or magazines that can hold more than 10 bullets, which would be the limit in the Feinstein bill, or if you care about keeping armor-piercing bullets legal, and we'll hear an exchange on that in a minute, why do you need them? Why do you dig in on this? What's the point compared to the bit of extra safety? And nobody says this is the whole answer to gun violence or massacres or anything, but a bit of extra safety that would come from not having them legally in circulation. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-WNYC. 9692 or anything else you want to say or ask of Matthew Dowd, 212-433-9692. And Matthew, I want to air part of an exchange along these lines on ABC last week that I think you were in the room for between former Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm of Michigan and former Republican presidential hopeful Rick Santorum. And I think this is typical of how people in the political sector often talk past each other on this.
The idea of pointing to the gun instead of pointing to society and to put no, not one thing the president did dealt with Hollywood and gun violence and video games and all of the glorification of violence.
Armor-piercing bullets.
Why do we need to protect Hollywood, putting films in front of us to glorify?
I'm asking you specifically.
Why are you
discussion? Armor-piercing bullets. Why do you need that?
Because we're talking about a particular type of bullet that is and can be available.
Do you don't wear armor? Why do you need an armor-piercing bullet?
But criminals could. Having the ability to defend yourself is something that is a right in our country.
Jennifer Granholm and Rick Santorum talking to or at least at each other on ABC this week, last weekend. And Matthew Dowd, I've heard any number of exchanges like that since Newtown. And the people on the Santorum side never quite answer the question. He almost did. He seemed to say that maybe a criminal is breaking into your home or into a store wearing armor, so we need to have armor-piercing bullets, though police departments hate the fact that they're in circulation.
Well, I was sitting right next to Jennifer Granholm in the course of that exchange, and I was sort of just I didn't say anything and stopped in the middle because as these things break out, I mean, it's part of the problem that we have a lot of times on television in Washington, D.C., and it's one of the benefits, Brian, of your show and shows like yours where you can actually have a reasonable conversation where people aren't yelling past each other in the course of this. There's no reason that somebody should be able to buy armor-piercing bullets. There's no reason, and no reasonable person that owns a gun or even doesn't own a gun but believes in the Second Amendment believes that that should be the case. But what happens is both sides, it's sort of what they each have a dogma, and if you're on the far right or the far left, you get in a dogma. Once you get yourself locked into a dogma, it's very hard to have a conversation about this. But if you took Rick Santorum out and sort of gave him sort of a truth serum and said, do we really need it? My guess is he would say, no, there's no reason for it. But because of how we push and shove on the polarized parts of this debate, it's really hard for people to get off of their dogma and move into some reasonable conversation.
Adam in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Adam.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to remind everybody that the Second Amendment wasn't passed for hunting. It was passed because the founders believed that we needed a well-regulated militia in case of a government becomes tyrannical. I mean, is that not the case?
Matthew, do you think that's the case? To clarify, Adam, are you saying that what the Second Amendment really guarantees is your right to arm yourself with enough firepower to fight off the police, be it the NYPD or the United States military, if it comes to that?
If it comes to it, I mean, you have to defend yourself with whatever means necessary. So it doesn't matter who it is. If somebody's going to try to kill you, you have to be well-equipped for that.
So, Matthew Dowd, there we go. And I think we would hear that from a lot of the more staunch defenders of the assault weapon and the large, large-capacity magazines, that there is this sense that they're taking away my freedom, they're taking away my ability to defend myself against King George-type tyranny.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. You hear that from elements of the thing. But, and we obviously don't want to necessarily get in debate on this, but my feeling about that is that much of that conversation was in a time, obviously that was in the 1770s, 1780s, 1790s, a different time. And I have an argument with folks that keep talking about, well, it's the Constitution, the Constitution, the Constitution. It took amendments to the Constitution, as you know, to one, not only get rid of slavery, to not only give African Americans the right to vote, to not only give women the right to vote. We've had a constitution that's had to be corrected or updated as society has changed. And I think the argument that keeps saying, well, it was the Second Amendment done back in the 1780s or 1790s, is a little specious in my view, because we all know that the Constitution wasn't perfect because we've had to correct it along the way.
So here on that point, I think, is Mike in Jersey City. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Brian. Yeah, that's exactly my question. I in my entire life, I may have shot 200 rounds, mostly at summer camp. I don't own a gun, and I have no interest in owning a gun. But I have a fundamental problem with the way the debate here goes, because it pretends that there isn't a Second Amendment that is quite specific on what it says. And it would seem to me the logical solution to the problem is to amend the Second Amendment, what your guest has just said. I mean, these aren't religious dogma, just modified to reflect modern times.
Just get, what is it, 3/4 of the Congress and then 2/3 of the states, or is it the other way around? That'll never happen, right?
It's going to be very, very difficult to happen. I think there's probably people that have not stated that position exactly the way the caller just stated, but I think there's a lot of people believe that if we want to do this instead of there's many people that believe a backdoor trying to change it by passing certain laws that take it away. What we people really need to do is have a conversation about whether or not that needs to be updated or not. But I can tell you politically, whether it's right or wrong, it will not happen. That change and that has become so locked in and become such a part of what people think of, sometimes unfortunately, as America, that it's going to be very, very, very difficult to change that.
Did you read that New Republic interview with President Obama where he said people on the gun control side need to do a better job of listening to gun owners, especially hunters? That's been making some news. But I was wondering whether you think that kind of listening can make a difference, or by only mentioning hunting rifles, which is all he mentioned in that quote, which are not the issue here, whether he advanced the dialogue or not.
Well, I think the president is right about, and it's much a broader thing, and I think the president hasn't always been perfect about this, about listening to people and understanding their values and what they represent. I think actually change can happen in a way that the majority would agree with if people would do more listening and less shouting. In the course of any debate, whether it's health care, whether it's guns, whether it's abortion, whether it's gay marriage, any debate, if people could just pause for a second and not think their opinions are facts before they start shouting, I think the president's right about that. I think both sides should try to correct themselves. And any number of shows, I mean, as your listeners, is if the way to make it happen is for people to only tune in to shows that feel like they're reasonable and the shouting is diminished. And that's what I would just suggest to people. Tune in to where you think you're going to get a reasonable conversation.
We'll use that as a promo every day for the next 3 years. My guest is Matthew Dowd, political contributor to ABC News, writer for National Journal, former chief strategist for the Bush-Cheney 2004 presidential campaign. And I want to touch on a couple of other political points from the last few days that people are talking about. Here is House Speaker John Boehner accusing the president of being interested in politics more than progress on the issues.
And given what we heard yesterday about the president's vision for his second term, it's pretty clear to me that it should be clear to all of you that he knows he can't do any of that as long as the House is controlled by Republicans. And so we're expecting here over the next 22 months to be the focus of this administration as they attempt to annihilate the Republican Party. And let me just tell you, I do believe that is their goal, to just shove us into the dustbin of history.
Out to shove the Republicans into the dustbin of history and annihilate them. That was John Boehner. Not great sound quality, but I think, listeners, you were basically able to hear it. He said that the day after the inaugural address, and all kinds of Republicans were repeating that line on the Sunday talk shows yesterday, Matthew. Honestly, when I hear it, I remember how Mitch McConnell said 2 years ago that the Republicans' number one goal for the last Congress was to defeat President Obama, as opposed to making progress on the issue. So I'm thinking, is this the Republicans' own playbook? Boehner is just recycling the line to accuse the president of what they themselves just did, or is there something more to it?
Well, first of all, politics is going on in Washington, and people are trying to win battles against their partisan opponents. I mean, I don't think that's like
shocking. Page one
for like anybody to say, like somebody wants to beat Barack Obama, which Republicans and many interest groups tried. Barack Obama wants to defeat Republicans. It's not big news. When I hear that, I think it's a mistake. You know, I'm purely independent now, having worked on both sides, first worked for Democrats, then worked for Republicans. It sounds to me, I have to say, it as if you're not going to address your own problems. It sounds like it comes from like a place of being a victim. And anytime you come from a place of being a victim, you're not going to do what you need to do to advance your goals and all that. And every time I hear that, it's like I think, why don't you fix what's wrong with your own situation before you start accusing the president of something everybody knows is obvious? Of course he wants to win in the course of these things. I just think it's a bad tack. They'd be much better off sitting in a room coming up with what they think is a vision for the future that's updated to fit where America is today and not an America of the 1950s. And if they did that and quit worried about what the president's doing and the Democrats doing, they're going to be more apt to win elections.
And the charge, I guess, that journalists need to keep an eye on is, as the Republicans position themselves in whatever ways they do, are the Democrats avoiding compromises that they could come to if they think it's going to wind up leaving the Republicans in a weaker position for the next election cycle? And I guess we'll see as things go on. But on the state of the GOP and taking care of their own house, they just had their party retreat in Williamsburg, Virginia this weekend. And the line getting the most attention is this from Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal's Thursday night speech.
We've got to stop being the stupid party. And I'm serious. It's time for a new Republican Party that talks like adults. It's time for us to articulate our plans and our visions for America in real terms. It's no secret we had a number of Republicans that damaged the brand this year with offensive and bizarre comments. I'm here to say we've had enough of that.
Bobby Jindal on Thursday night. And Matthew Dowd, Jindal and other leaders were precise after that speech in saying, and he during it, that they need better candidates and better technology, but not a new platform. And I wonder if, in electoral terms, they're just planning to put lipstick on a pig.
Well, that would be a huge problem. I mean, if I was advising them, which I'm not, but I think first the thing you have to do if you're going to be successful in politics is you have to accept and understand where your constituency that is in the country is. And I think that they have to do that first. The idea that they can sort of come up with the right message or come up with some slick candidate and somehow fix the problem, it's they have to sort of say, like, we have not reflected where America is today on any number of issues and values and the concerns. And until they sort of look themselves in the face and say, we have to be that, before they worry about marketing and tactics, all of which is only successful on the fringes. If you're disconnected from where the majority of the country is, you're going to have a problem. I said after Election Day, after watching what happened on election night, I said the problem with the Republican Party is they're a madmen party in a modern family world. And until they become part of the modern family world, it's going to be very difficult for them to win elections.
Matthew Dowd, writer for National Journal, political contributor to ABC News, and former chief strategist for the Bush-Cheney 2004 presidential campaign, though we just said that he also worked for Democrats in the past. Thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate talking to you.
Great to be here, Brian. Take care.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, New York City's newest mayoral candidate, public advocate Bill de Blasio. He declared yesterday and wants to change some Bloomberg policies on housing, education, stop and frisk, and taxes. Stay with us.